Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast. I'm Ollie Lum, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Seddon. This week's guest is Lizzie Bird. Lizzie's had a fantastic season this year, finishing ninth for the Olympic Games and running a British record in the process in the steeplechase. Enjoy.
Yes, hello guys, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Wowee, it's just become the norm. We're getting British record holder Olympians on every week now. So look, I hope you enjoy this one, Lizzie Bird. Big thing for me is we basically break down her season. You know, from the start of the season, she was opening with, you know, high 930s to the end of the season. She's in the Olympic final running 919 British record. You know, she chops nearly 20 seconds off her season's best time by the end of the season. So we talk a lot about that, dealing with the stress of chasing these standards early season, dealing with the stress of COVID as well. And she was based out in America, so trying to find races and potentially coming back to Europe. And then we just talk about that trust in her coach and that very progressive, every race getting better, that confidence higher you roll. And also we talk a lot about goal setting. You know, it's clear Lizzie set 4 goals this year. British record, Olympic final, sub 920, and British champion. She ticked all these goals. So find out how she does it and how she goes about doing that. But look, fascinating episode. I hope you will enjoy it. I hope you enjoyed the pre-classic. You would have seen Lizzie race out there by the time this is released as well. And yes, we'll catch you next week. Get a great long run in. Enjoy the episode. See you guys soon.
Anyway, first of all, Lizzie, welcome to the podcast. And just congrats on 2 British records this year and 9th for the Olympics. How does it feel?
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
Yeah. I bet it does, Lizzie. I mean, where do we start really with, you know, them performances that you had? I guess, do you want to just talk about the records, you know, talk about how that 9th place at the Olympic Games, how it kind of panned out for you?
Sure. Yeah. Just interrupt me if I'm going on too long. But yeah, I mean, I was going into it, my goal was definitely to make the final. I was pretty sure I was capable of that. And then just to try and be as competitive as I could once I was in the final. And the heat went really smoothly, actually. I felt pretty comfortable and controlled. I think I was lucky in that my heat was probably a slightly easier one. We went a little slower than the others, so I was able to feel comfortable. But also, yeah, I mean, I was a little worried that fastest loser spot might be hard to get. But it was nice to be up there with the front pack. And yeah, just made it in as fastest loser. And then recovered pretty well for the final, but it definitely felt harder than I was expecting. I mean, obviously I expected it to feel hard, but it felt a lot harder than the heat, even though the conditions were better. We just like, it was a weird race in that we went out like kind of fast and then we slowed and then we sped up and then we slowed. And then there was a really big move. Obviously Courtney went out halfway and then everyone was just strung out and I was kind of hanging on for dear life, but was able to hang on for a decent finish. So happy with that.
Yeah. Obviously, how was it from your experience? Cause I think we kind of missed most of that bit of the race just because obviously the big move, like you say.
Yeah.
So was it kind of really, really spread out for you, or was there still some sort of main pack going on?
It was pretty spread out. I would say, like, yeah, for the first kilometer, everyone was together. And it was, we were spreading out almost into lane 3 because everyone was just still in it and almost slowing down towards the barriers. It just felt like a complete mess. And then, yeah, it must have been about 1K. Or maybe it was more like halfway. And I didn't know it was Courtney who'd made a move, but I just felt that suddenly there were gaps. And I'd kind of been keeping my eye on Miss Mass and been aiming to kind of stick on her. And I remember suddenly on the back straight, she like sprinted and I was like, where's she gone? I can't keep up. And it just, yeah, I wasn't able to go with that move, but I think a lot of other people weren't. And then a lot of people who did go with the move came back to me later on in the race. So yeah, it really spread out and it's a bizarre race.
I mean, one thing, in both the heat and the final, you just remained so competitive, you know, and I think you must have just been focusing on the people around you. I mean, on that, I mean, you said the race was going, you know, kind of yo-yoing at the start and you were bunching and then it kind of, you know, surged. Do you think you got more in the tank as well?
I think I do. I think so. We'll see. I'm racing the pre-classic next weekend.
Oh, wow.
So I think that will be a good opportunity to run fast. But having said that, coming off the Olympics, my legs and body and mind have had a bit of a lull. So we'll see if I can get back. But I think I can run a little faster than that in a more ideal race.
I mean, on that, I mean, do you want to just the effects of a steeplechase are huge, aren't they? You know, even, you know, you're a shade off your PB in the heats. And then, you know, what did you do 2 days in between to help you recover?
Really very, very little. I went straight in an ice bath after the heats and then ate a lot of food. I really wanted to walk around outside, but I was just like, I've got to stay in bed in the air conditioning as much as possible. I did a little jog the first day and then I went and did my usual pre-race, like a couple miles and some 200s and the second day. We had a decent amount of time in between 2.5 days. So I think it was enough time to get relatively recovered. Not fully, but too bad.
Yeah, just on the up and down pace again, obviously we know that makes a massive difference in all distance events, but do you think the steeple in particular, that can really mess up with the rhythm of the barriers and stuff?
Yeah, I think in some sense, yes, but in another sense, I think as steeplers, we're kind of used to running as a fartlek because the steeple is essentially kind of a fartlek. You've got to accelerate and decelerate all the time into and out of the barriers. So I think we're maybe a little more prepared for that. But it was, yeah, definitely more exaggerated. And it was kind of the opposite of what you want. I felt like we were slowing going into the barriers, which gets you out of your rhythm.
And then, I mean, when you do bunch into the barriers, do you find that it affects your hurdling at all? Or have you learned, I mean, one thing, you have done a lot of races this year and you are experienced, you know, you're getting more and more experienced championship racing. So you probably know what it's like to hurdle in a pack, don't you?
Yeah. And I didn't feel like my hurdling was too bad. In the heat, my last two hurdles were pretty rubbish. And so going into the final, I kind of tried to focus on it a little bit more. So I don't think they were, too bad.
Yeah. Obviously looking at season as a whole, like it's not finished yet, but you've kind of achieved like some great things. Obviously the British records we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. When the season started, did you envisage these things happening?
No, not at all. I mean, yes and no. I had set as like my four goals for the year were performance related goals, which are win the British champs, run record, and make the Olympic final. There was one other one under 9:20. I think that was the other one. So I just about did all of them. Yeah, it was really satisfying ticking them off in my running log. But the season got off to a pretty rocky start. I think I was trying to force it too much. I wasn't in great shape early on. And just having that pressure of trying to get the time, but also knowing that I had been so close to it before, I got way too focused on the clock. And kind of forgot how to race. So I would say the first few races out of the season were not very enjoyable at all. But they kind of, forced me to reevaluate the way I was looking at racing and just, look at it more as racing rather than chasing a time. And then I was kind of finally able to get that time. And from there, everything went really smoothly. So it was just getting over that initial barrier.
I mean, it's fascinating because obviously that 9:19 you ran in the Olympics was probably the most competitive race and you probably weren't even thinking about the clock, you know, the whole way.
Exactly.
And so obviously you were coming out trying to get the time and then it's almost like once you hit it, your season just snowballed, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Everything went pretty well after that. It's one of those things. I think when things are going poorly, it's kind of hard to get out of that rut. But once you're out of it, as long as you've kind of put in the work and that's in the bank, I think once you get a good race, it can be easier to get that, keep that ball moving, I guess.
Mm. I mean, you ran, we were just having a quick route. You ran 9:17 indoors in January and you came out 9:19. So that was over the flat for context for people. Yeah.
When you ran I really want to run 9:17 now.
Yeah, yeah. And you ran 9:19 outdoors over the in the steeplechase in an Olympic final. Like, how did you, you know, just like you said, you're in a rut, and mentally, how do you sort of work your way out of that?
I mean, that 9:17 indoors was awful. I remember, like, yeah, Helen Clitheroe was there with me, and I just remember crying to her afterwards, like, what am I doing with my life? How the heck do I think I'm, like, chasing the Olympics when I can't break my, like, a time I ran 5 years ago over 3K? And wow. I think, yeah, I was training pretty hard then. It was my first, this is gonna sound really pathetic, but it was my first winter living in the UK in, like, 5-6 years. So I was kind of living in a new place, doing kind of new training, like I joined in with the Leeds group a bit and they were kicking my butt on a lot of workouts. And my boyfriend was out here in the States, and yeah, we'd been long distance for like 6 months. And I found out actually in February that I was able to get a exemption, I forget what it's called, to come and travel to the States. So I just decided then to come out here to Boulder, just kind of where we planned on moving to anyway. And I think once I came out here, yeah, things started to improve. I don't know what it was exactly, but I just got a little bit more settled and into more of a rhythm with training, and yeah, things it's went up. Yeah.
Incredible turnaround, isn't it, Lum?
Yeah. Did you always kind of trust that it would happen, or did you feel yourself almost thinking I'm running out of time here?
Yeah, I really thought I was running out of time. And the kind of stressful thing as well in April, May, when I was doing, I think I did 3 steeples in 3 weeks here. And going into that third one, I'd kind of told myself, if I don't get the time, I've got to go to Europe and start racing. And at that time, I didn't really have a base in the UK and COVID was still happening. And just the thought of traveling and doing all of that by myself and still chasing the time was pretty stressful. And I ended up staying here a little longer and managed to get it at the Portland meet in late May. But yeah, there were definitely weeks, months where I just, where I was worried that it wouldn't happen. But I guess it was just more about focusing on the process. And I think what I told myself going into this year was, like, regardless of the outcome, I'm focusing this year on trying to qualify for the Olympics. And that has value in and of itself as, like, a pursuit. And so in that sense, I kind of was preparing myself for if I didn't make it, I would still be satisfied that I had given it a go.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. And like you say, that was probably all you needed just to take the pressure off of each run.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Get back down to the basics. I mean, so yeah, you had an incredible season. Let's just rewind and talk about, like you said, I can't believe this was your first winter in the UK for 6 years. Goodness. Yeah, that would have shocked to anyone. Yeah. And obviously before that you were based in Princeton and then you kind of transferred to San Francisco, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you want to kind of just, like, talk about your NCAA journey? And that's where you picked up steeplechasing as well, didn't you?
It is. Yeah. I'd never thought about it before I went out to Princeton. And then my coach there somehow convinced me to give it a go. I really was pretty skeptical, but I tried it out and just really enjoyed it. I don't know. There's something fun about running around in circles and jumping over things. And I think, I mean, it helps that I was pretty good at it and I wasn't going to qualify in the 1500 for regionals my freshman year. And I was after a few races in steeplechase. So I just thought I may as well give it a go and then stuck at it. And I had a few injuries towards the end of my time at Princeton, which were my first, like, real injuries. I'd been pretty healthy up until that point. And I think probably the steeple had something to do with it. I also have a pretty unconventional running form. I don't look very pretty when I run. I'm a bit lopsided. And that was, I think, putting some forces in the wrong place. And so I ended up with a stress reaction in my left femur. And I've had two of those. I had one of them in 2016 and the same again in 2018. So they set me back. But so yeah, I graduated from Princeton kind of feeling like I wasn't done with running and wanted to give it another year. And I had some cross-country eligibility. So went out to San Francisco and honestly had a pretty rough year there. My training load increased a lot. And that was when I got my second stress reaction at the end of that year. And I was pretty ready to call it a day with competitive running, but came back for my last cross-country season. New coach came in, Pat McCurry, who coaches me now. And I was just, I was just kind of getting back into it and trying to enjoy it again and have more fun with it. And I did. And he said to me, you know, I think you qualify for the world champs if you let me keep coaching you. And so I did. And yeah, eventually somehow managed to get there and kept at it once things started going well.
Wow, what an awesome coach.
Yeah, it was good timing as well. I think just at that point I think somehow the pressure was off at that point, where I just kind of thought I'm probably going to be done with it, but may as well give it one last go, and then it worked out. So yeah,
I think it's a weird thing in the NCAAs, isn't it? I think you kind of always see it, people in their senior year, they almost put too much pressure on their senior year, or like you say, your final year of eligibility.
Yeah.
And it never goes according to plan, does it? You never have that fairytale ending.
Yeah. And I think there is this idea, I think, especially in the US, that if you're not, you know, peaking at age 22, 23, that, you know, that's it. Or whatever you're running age 22, 23, that's your peak. Maybe a couple more years, you can do well. But I think athletes are showing more and more, especially women, that you can be peaking into your late 20s, early 30s. And yeah, I think it can be difficult to get a contract or join a team if you haven't peaked at the right time. Yeah. So yeah, that makes it challenging. So I'm glad I was able to stick at it, even though I took a bit longer to.
Yeah, I would say in the US, yeah, they do give it a short career span, and they kind of do that across all sports. And I think they just do it because, like you say, they have such a good NCAA system and set up. And there's just pressure on going pro. And if you don't, they're like, well, it's not feasible to do it alone.
That same level of support. I mean, I didn't realize it at the time, but the level of support you have in the NCAA with athletic trainers, coaches, teammates, just there is incredible. And once you are out of that, unless you join a professional team, you're really on your own and have to start figuring stuff out for yourself a little bit more.
I mean, it's showing all the time, isn't it, Lam? Like the peaking age in running just seems to, like you said, and I think even more so in an event like the steeplechase, Lizzie, the age people are peaking now is late 20s, early 30s, isn't it, Ollie?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. Like you mentioned your transition out of college then. So how was that? Because obviously you kind of mentioned you're still with the same coach. So how did that work out?
Yeah, so I worked for a little bit at an immigration law firm. I only lasted 6 months actually, but I was kind of training mostly by myself, a little bit with the team because I was still in San Francisco at that point. So that was the first half of 2019. And then when it came down to summer racing season and again, trying to get the time and qualify for the world champs, I made the decision to just move back home for that summer, and train full time. But I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do that without the support of my parents. Like I didn't have a sponsorship. I just lived at home with them and was not earning any money. I had like a little bit of savings, but yeah, I mean, my family support's been incredible. And I think I'm really aware that I'm super privileged to have that. And a lot of people don't. And I think a lot of people, other people in my position, if they'd had the same college career, would not have had the second chance with running that I've been lucky to have. So yeah, I think pretty lucky with that. And then qualifying for the world champs definitely gave me the belief that I could then qualify for the Olympics. But again, it was kind of struggling to find a sponsorship, which I eventually did during middle of COVID. But I moved back to San Francisco at that point, and yeah, it was just living off of my boyfriend paying the rent, and making it work.
Yeah. Wow. That's such a commitment, obviously. Like, obviously, with the world champs and stuff and making that team, that's obviously quite good justification. But before that, did you give yourself a time span, I guess? Because I know some people, when they almost go and say, right, I'm just going to give running a real go, they'll say, I don't know, I've got a year or 2 years where I don't have to get a proper job, if you like.
Yeah.
Did you give yourself that?
Yeah, I did. And I think, I mean, it was a short time span because it was June of that year that I quit my job in San Francisco. And the world champs was October the same year. So it was, okay, let's give it a go this summer for these few months. And then after the world champs, I just decided, let's give it a go for another year. And then COVID hit. And that was kind of tough because I was then like, can I really justify giving it another year when I don't really know? At that point, I kind of thought, well, maybe the world championships was a fluke and maybe I can't actually qualify for the Olympics. And then what am I doing, you know, running full time? But yeah, just decided to stay committed to it. And I was meant to start law school twice and then deferred it twice to chase the Olympics. And now I'm going to be starting next week.
Wow. I mean, I was just about to say as well on that, I mean, it must have been, you know, a mental stress. And did it put any pressure and stress on your relationships at all?
I don't think so. I mean, probably nothing like that I can really put my finger on. But I think, yeah, as I said, I've been really lucky that my parents have been super supportive. My boyfriend too. He'll definitely kept saying like, you need to get a proper job at some point. He was excited for me to you know, be chasing the Olympics and helped out a lot with my workouts.
It's crazy though, because obviously you've run 919. You're a British record holder. You know, there's big years coming up. So are you, you know, obviously you're starting law school next week. Are you confident you'll be able to manage the two?
I'm relatively confident. I'm not sure, to be honest. I'm going into it like thinking that I can, and also, I don't know, knowing that if I find it really hard this first semester, then maybe I'll reassess, because I really do want to compete next summer. It's a really Absolutely. Big summer of competitions. But I think it is easier to balance school with running than it is full-time work, because there is just that bit more flexibility with your schedule. And I think I don't have any classes earlier than 9 and none later than 3 or 4. So I'll definitely have the time to fit it in. I think the one thing that might suffer is recovery. And so I just have to, yeah, kind of keep an eye on that and adjust training if needed.
Yeah, for sure. What's that stuff going to kind of look like then? Obviously, you mentioned you're in Colorado. Like, what in terms of like training partners and things like that, have you got out there ready to go, I guess?
Yeah, so I'm still kind of figuring it out, but I do have quite a few friends here. Somehow, a lot of my teammates from Princeton actually have moved out here. So, and quite a few of them are still running. So I have plenty of friends to run with for easy run days. And then for sessions, usually my boyfriend will help me out with the pacing, and so I think we'll probably stick with that model just because it gives me the most flexibility in terms of when I can fit in my sessions and while still having company for the easy days, which my days are pretty easy.
Yeah, I think that's huge, isn't it, to, you know, to have that convenience for yourself when you're training.
Yeah. And we're 2 miles away from a track, so I can kind of step out the door and do my warm up from here. So
it's pretty good. I mean, yeah.
You're in one of the best places in the world.
Yeah. There's so many good trails.
Yeah. We've liked the training stuff. So I feel like there's kind of not two types of steeplechaser, more than that, but there's kind of steeplechasers who do I'd call it generic distance running work, and then almost race steeples, maybe a little bit of hurdles. Like, how much kind of steeple specific training do you do, or would you consider what type would you consider yourself, I guess?
That's a good question. I don't do much specific work in terms of hurdling. I'll only do, I don't know, a handful of sessions over hurdles a year, but I would say that all of my sessions on the track or road are geared towards steeple in terms of Like, I think we do a lot of pace change work. So I'll never do like, you know, 10 400s at the same pace. It will always be, you know, sets of slow going to fast, or, you know, gradually building throughout. So I think that helps. As we were talking about earlier, steeple, I think, is kind of like a fartlek. So a lot of my training kind of reflects that.
Yeah, I quite like that, because it sounds like you're obviously all year round, you're thinking about the steeplechase. And I think that, yeah, you know, that proves in your performances this year as well.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I leave a lot of the thinking up to my coach in terms of sessions.
Yeah.
But I would say we both are, yeah. And he coaches a lot of steeplers, so that's kind of his focus, which, yeah, gives me the confidence to...
What do you think you're particularly good at the steeple, you know, and what sort of traits do you, you know, would you see in someone and you think, oh, they'd potentially be a good steepler?
I think, I mean, you've obviously got to have some level of flexibility and strength to get over the hurdles. I think you've got to be, I think strength really plays into it. And that's something I've worked on this year a lot, is just getting in the weight room more and lifting heavier weights. I've been working with the strength coaches at Leeds, with the Leeds Talent Hub, even out here, and they've been really great. And I think that's helped me become a more robust athlete. I think you have to be pretty robust to do the steeple, because it is a lot of force on your legs. And so, I mean, you can get injured, as I learned early on. I would say I'm pretty robust now, but yeah, I'd say that's the biggest quality.
I mean, what do you have, like a rehab program or prehab program, should I say, you know, or do you just bank on the training load just being just enough, but not too much?
Yeah, I try to keep on top of just little like activation exercises before I run, and, you know, stretches, dynamic stretches, yoga. I do a lot of yoga, actually. I think that helps a lot after running, and then strength twice a week. But I'd say I never, like, you know, go straight into a run or come back. And I mean, sometimes I'll just come back and sit on the floor, do nothing. But I would say usually I'll do at least like 5 minutes before and after, yeah, which I think helps me keep me healthy.
I think a lot of people can relate to that, just sitting there after the run and staring at the wall and thinking, what is this? What is life? No, I just want to touch upon, you mentioned earlier, kind of, you let your coach do most of it. And I think that's everyone's ideal, really. But it takes some kind of level of belief to start believing in a program. Like, did you always find that with your coach? Did it almost click straight away? Or is it kind of built up over the years?
It definitely took a while. I think, yeah, the first year or so, I would probably try and overrun sessions, and it took me a while to build up that confidence. And I would still say, like, I let him handle the sessions, and then on other days I'll kind of take a bit more control in terms of what pace I want to run. I mean, usually I'm running pretty easy, but sometimes if I'm feeling good, I'll push the pace a little bit. And I have, I feel like I've kind of come to learn what my body needs with that. And I guess same with workouts at this point, but yeah, definitely took a little bit of time to build that trust.
Yeah, for sure. Sounds like you've got a good balance there. Cause I guess, yeah, there's some athletes who are really inquisitive and some that don't want to know about it at all. Have you got any advice for younger athletes who, I guess, they might be too inquisitive, if you like, sometimes?
Yeah. And I think sometimes you've just got to, like, there are so many different sessions you could be doing. And there are so many different routes to get to the same place, that I think as long as you're, getting your heart rate up and running kind of hard, but not too hard, you're going to get some value out of the session.
Yeah, for sure.
I think you're bang on with that. Are you coached at a distance then? Is Pat, obviously he's not going to be based in Boulder, is he?
No, he's not. So he's actually based in Idaho now. He was in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. But we've pretty much always worked from a distance, which I think I'm pretty happy with. It gives me like a little bit of independence in terms of, yeah, when I do my training and changing it a little bit if I want to.
Yeah, I think like you say, I mean, it's, I always look at people who are coached from a distance. I'm like, you must, you know, Ollie touched upon it there. You must really have that trust and sense of belief in the program, not to, you know, to stick to it when you're on your own. And there's probably days where you feel terrible, or like you say, training's not going well, you're in a rut and you're like, God, you know, how do I get out of it? You know, so you must have a good communication with him and frequent communication, or do you just kind of catch up once in a while?
Yeah, well, we'll have a phone call once a week just to kind of check in and talk about the week's training. And we'll just message after workouts about how it's gone. But yeah, I guess because we've just been doing it for so long now, I'm pretty comfortable with it. And yeah, in terms of getting out of a rut, I think it's just kind of, yeah, focusing on the process and on each day and trying to get what the goal is out of each day, whether it's recovery or pushing yourself.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Obviously, kind of on that rut that we kind of mentioned a little bit, which obviously turned out all right in the end. Did it help having kind of Amy Pratt this year with the steeple? You two have kind of past few years, you kind of been to and fro in a little bit, like in British steeple chasing, like you guys have really brought it on, like particularly on the women's side. Has that helped having, I guess, do you call it a rivalry or is it friendly rivalry? I don't know.
Yeah, friendly rivalry. I think it's definitely helped. I mean, Rosie kind of got the ball rolling with that, and then Amy and I were kind of trying to catch up with her, I guess, in 2019. And I think this year we're both chasing the time, and eventually, I mean, we both kept getting pretty close to it, but not quite getting there. And then I think I got it. And then a couple of days later or something, she got it at a different race and went faster than I did. And she got really close to the record. So I saw that and I was like, oh no, I've got to go try and get the record. But yeah, it's definitely helped. And I think steeplechase is growing, and I hope that we get even more women so we can get a bit more strength and depth over the next few years.
Well, yeah, and I hope British Athletics take notice of your performances, and I hope they back you in that sense as well, because, you know, if you can't support a British record holder, what is the governing body there for, you know?
Yeah.
But we'll see, time will tell. But I mean, on that, do you, when you race Amy, do you feel more pressure at all? You know, when you have these head to heads, does it mean a little bit more to beat her?
I think, it definitely at the British champs it did. And I mean, talking about British athletics, like it, I think it, I mean, I don't know if I'll get on funding, but I think I kind of wanted to do everything I could to try and make that happen, especially after going through the appeal process 2 years ago, and trying to convince them that I was worth putting a bit of money into. But I think we talked about how winning British champs could make a difference with that. And so that definitely put some pressure on. So I think that was less in terms of me versus Amy and more in terms of me trying to show that I am a decent athlete.
You are. But you absolutely are, you know. And do you reckon that put a chip on your shoulder, you know?
Definitely.
That 2019 season, you were like, okay, yeah, I'm going to show you, you know what you're missing out on, basically. And you're now running 9:19, which is an incredible time.
Yeah. And I think the biggest chip was one of the, I don't know if I'm really meant to talk about this, but one of the primary reasons was that my trajectory and my age. And I think it's all done on, you know, previous statistics, and there aren't that many statistics for women's steeplechase. And I think women in the past couldn't continue training and competing beyond their early mid 20s because the support wasn't there, and now it is. So I think, like we said earlier, it's easier to continue improving as you get older, but I didn't fit that age trajectory. So I kind of, the chip on my shoulder was like, I'm not too old, and I need to prove to everyone I'm not too old.
it's nonsense in that sense. And I think with, like you were saying, with women before, and I think just generally with athletes before, they probably haven't seen, they haven't found a way to make training work and competing work, you know, around their lifestyle. Wouldn't you agree, Lum?
Yeah, I think I'm right in saying it. Is it steeple was first introduced to women in the Olympics? Was it Beijing or?
Yeah.
Around then, wasn't it? Yeah, it's crazy.
100 years after the men.
Yeah, it's absolutely madness, isn't it? And then like you say, you talk about statistics there, and if the event's not even been around, how can you even have any? But like, yeah, it's so good to see. It's like a fascinating event. And yeah, obviously with obviously you've seen a lot of Americans do really well in the past few years. Has that kind of spurred you on a bit as well? And I think it has for the men in a sense as well, just how it's not always, well, we obviously had Kenya losing for the first time for the men in so many years this year. So has the kind of Americans and other Europeans spurred you guys on a bit as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think because it is, because it has the combination of endurance and technique, you see more Americans and Europeans up there when the 5 and 10 are probably a little more dominated by East Africans. But I think, yeah, especially being in university in the States, I always had Emma Coburn and Corny Fredericks to kind of look up to. And obviously they're still doing great things now. So that's, yeah, they've definitely been big inspirations for me.
You're going to be, you're pretty close to Coburn now, aren't you? Have you spoke to her at all, or do you just kind of fangirl at the moment?
No, definitely still a fangirl.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Is that experience weird though? Because I guess, like, yeah, if these people are people that experience you, what's it like when you kind of start lining up alongside them? If you've been, in previous years, because I guess it comes a point where you start seeing them as, rivals rather than like.
Yeah, I mean, it was bizarre in the final. I mean, obviously Emma had a really tough race and she fell on that last lap. She was just in front of me. And so I saw that happen and I was going around her in my last lap and I was kind of almost delirious because I'm so tired. It's just like, what the heck is going on? Why is Emma Coburn even anywhere near me? And why is she on the floor? I mean, obviously that's heartbreaking for her, but yeah, I think it's definitely going to take a little bit more time and confidence to look to people like her and Courtney as, you know, competitors, people that I could beat. But maybe I'll get there soon.
Oh, I think you absolutely will. And I think you basically are already. And I think that was one of the cool things when someone like you has a breakthrough at the Olympic Games. I think then in future years, you kind of go, well, look, I was ninth in the Olympics. You know, I can race the best of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one, I guess some confidence that I do have confidence in my ability to perform at championships. I think I'm not very good at time trialing and I'm not very good at racing in the winter and the off season, but when it comes to championships, I'm a pretty decent track record of like, I'll run my PBs there. So I think that gives me confidence going into those big races.
Yeah. 100%. Like I'd agree with that. Like that was the most impressive thing I thought about your kind of, not just your Olympic campaign, but the months leading up to it. It was like you won British champs and you had Monaco, the British record. Then you ran pretty much that time again, like not far off it in your heat. Mm-hmm. And then 3 days later, you come back and run another personal best in, like you say, the championship final. Like when all you can do really, if you PB, you can't really complain with where you end up, can you?
Yeah, I can't ask for more than that. I definitely wouldn't have. I don't think I would have expected that if you told me that in even like May this year. So
yeah. I think that's it though. And I think it's like, we talk about your training program from your coach as well. Like to be peaking at the right time as well. Is so important. I think it gets a bit overlooked, particularly in years where people are just chasing times early on. It's so hard to then think bigger picture if you don't have the time from like previous years and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's something that gave me that trust in his program this year was I was able to peak at the World Championships, even off, you know, not running that first earlier in the year. So, I had that confidence that I would peak at the right time, and just having some, I had some really solid workouts coming into those races, which gave me the confidence.
What was the key workout for you, Lizzie? Or can you not say?
I can. I feel like none of my workouts are that impressive, but I did one in front of row that I was really pleased with, which I'll do this workout. I've done it twice this year. I'd actually never done it before, but it's just 3x500 off like 10 to 15 minutes jog recovery. So you like get in your spikes, you run a 500 pretty fast, get out of them. So it's a lot of faff. But I ran my second and third 500s were like PBs. And I think my third one I went through in 57, 58 for the four. So I was pretty happy with that. But yeah, I won't often do really hard, like all out speed work like that. So I think when I do, it's kind of fun and I'll really go for it. But other than that, I would say just I think one thing that I've got a lot better at this year is tempo work. I've never been great at that kind of strength, and I'm not really a 5K runner. But I think that's helped me become a better steepler this year.
That's a really impressive workout for a steepler. You know, it shows the element of speed you still need for the event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I really want to go run some flat races now to see what I can run, but we'll see if I can fit any in.
Yeah. No, I think that is interesting. Like you say, Matt, about that, like, cause you don't see many, I guess a lot of steeplers consider it to be, they're almost distance guys or girls that hurdle rather than necessarily being a 1500 steepler. Which I guess, like, from what you said, that's what you consider yourself rather than a steeple 5K girl.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't run a fast 15, so I don't know if I can really call myself that, but I think I could run a good one if I get into a good race. But my training is definitely, closer to 1500 training.
Sure.
Well, yep. You say you haven't run a fast 15, Lizzie. You and Ollie have actually raced each other.
Really?
So you could get him to pace you again.
Yeah, it's Stretford.
Oh,
he did year? Lizzie. Yeah, this year. Yeah.
My 1500 PV.
There you go. I did take the race by the horns with a couple laps to go, so you can thank me for that.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was happy with that race. I wanted to go a little faster. I probably should have hung on to you a little more.
I think that was just before British Champs as well?
Yeah, that was, I think, 10 days out.
Yeah, because I remember seeing, because we did a British Champs prediction. I remember being like, oh, yeah, well, 1500 PB just before Champs, it's a good sign
for
going into a championship, like confidence and things like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, yeah, you mentioned we want to get into some flat races. What are your kind of plans for the rest of the season and then beyond as well?
At the moment, the only solid plan I have is to run it pre. And I think I'm just going to see how my body is feeling after that. If there are any road miles or flat 15s that I can get into after that, I'll give them a go. But I think if my body's feeling tired, I'll probably just call it season, take a couple of weeks off and start this long, slow build again.
Yeah, have you had that? I mean, you've probably experienced that Olympic hangover for people who are not Olympians and they've never been to a major championships. You know, what is it like sort of coming home after, you know, really reaching, you know, the pinnacle of your career?
Yeah, it's weird. It seems like so long ago now that I was there, but it was less than a week ago. Honestly, I feel like the travel was the worst part. It's just a really long way. And I had two nights of not very much sleep, because I think once I finished the final, you can't sleep, and then you don't have the motivation to force yourself to sleep. And after, especially, I don't know, the weeks, months before, focusing so much on like sleep being the number one thing and number one priority, I'm just kind of fed up of recovering. So I got back here, and we moved house, or house, place, apartment, as I was coming back. So I came back to that, which was a bit of a shock back to reality, and kind of hit a point of exhaustion a few days after I got back, but slowly getting back into the rhythm of things. And honestly, it's nice not to be living out of a suitcase anymore. I think I spent 2 months living out of a suitcase, not staying anywhere for more than a couple of weeks. So it's good to be a bit more settled.
Yeah. Do you have any plans for the off season? Like, how do you normally spend it? Is it nothing, or do you go and do kind of other things that you wouldn't normally do, I guess?
Well, usually after World Champs, we went on a camping trip, which was really fun, but I will be starting law school pretty soon.
Oh, yeah. So
maybe like a weekend trip. And there's also a lot of smoke here at the moment. I mean, I'm lucky that we are so close to the mountains, so we could get out into them while I'm not training, but hopefully the smoke clears and it's a little more enjoyable to be outside.
What's going on? You've got forest fires, or?
Yeah, it's actually from the California fires. The smoke's come all the way over here because they're pretty bad at the moment. Yeah.
Wow.
To Colorado?
Yeah.
Jesus, mate, that is mild.
Scary, isn't it? Yeah.
That's really not good. I mean, I guess it's thick smoke where you know, is it so much smoke that you struggle to sort of run in, or you wouldn't want to push yourself hard?
Yeah, I definitely, you don't notice, the particles are really small, so you don't really notice them, except like it is kind of gray out. But yeah, you do, I feel like you feel it in your lungs if you're running a bit too hard. So I've done a few more cross training sessions in the gym, and the ones like training inside in the gym feels better than outside.
Goodness me, man. I mean, to be fair, actually, on Colorado, like one last note, like the weather is, isn't it known to sort of, the sun will shine 300 times a year?
Yeah, yeah. The sun is great. It will get really cold in the winter, but yeah. I think having the sun just makes such a difference. I can deal with the cold when the sun is out.
And Boulder is what, 5,000 feet, is it?
5,000 feet, yeah. So I think it's a really nice, I'd actually never done altitude training before I came out here in February, but I think it was a good kind of starter for me. And it's not so high that you can't do speed work. So I feel like on the track, you can get pretty much to what you do at sea level. And it's just the more tempo work that you kind of have to take a little bit easier.
Wow. That's so interesting. So your first time altitude this year?
Yeah. I done one trip to South Africa, but that's 3,000. So I don't think that really counts.
Yeah. Did you see that as a risk at all, like going into the Olympics, or were you just kind of it will help? Because I know for obviously most people it helps, but I guess it does make the training, you have to adjust it slightly.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried about it. But again, that was the point we talked about earlier where things weren't going well and I just kind of needed to make a change. And so I just went for it. I actually really struggled the first month out here. And I think that was, I kind of later figured out my iron levels were low and my vitamin D levels were low, which I think was from the winter in England. But yeah, once I kind of sorted that out and got more on top of my nutrition and a bit more adjusted, things started clicking.
See, but it took a while. That's what I'm saying. Colorado, the sun shines 300 times a year.
Yeah.
You don't get low on vitamin D, you're at altitude. It is
exactly the dream. You have to take iron, but that's about it. I highly recommend.
Well, thanks very much, Lizzie. I mean, it's been fascinating, and good luck in pre. Is it Saturday? Is pre classic on Saturday?
The following Saturday. So I've got another.
Saturday. So when this comes out, you'll be racing the pre classic.
Yeah.
Stellar fields as always.
Yeah.
And it's
last.
you've competed at some big diamond leagues this year. Monaco and pre classic are probably the biggest, aren't they?
Yeah.
You never know, Lizzie. You might get invited to the, maybe law school will get in the way, but you could be getting an invite to the Diamond League finals.
I know. My agent called me up after.
I know. Have you considered that?
And said I might, and I just hadn't even considered it. So cross that bridge if and when I come to it.
Well, thanks so much for coming on, and yeah, best of luck for the rest of the season and beyond.
Thank you. Well, thanks so much for having me. It was great to chat.
Thanks for listening, guys. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. As always, if you did, please leave us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service, as it really helps us out. As for next week's guest, we spoke to Charlie Grice. Wow, what a career. 1500 meter runner, 330, Olympic finalist in 2016. And it's a great episode for you guys. So look forward to that. See you next week.